General Electric and Jack Welch also contributed immensely to the Indian IT industry. So, as I said, the GE project coming to India was one of the pioneering projects that India had done. And I repeatedly call it India because I'll not, you know, name or restrict itself only to one particular company. But then it had brought good amount of work to all the companies, and slowly this was bringing in a cultural shift. A cultural change in the mindset of the companies which are based in USA, so as to offshore work to the Indian companies. So with the help of GE, major Indian companies matured in the setup of development centers. They developed their security processes, project management was enhanced, and realized that this is an industry which is quite different from trading. Companies had to invest in training, employee development to keep up with the world. So When you talk about an outsourcing contract, the company would generally outsource because there is skilled resources on the other side, right? So a lot of companies had to invest time, effort and money to train the people, the necessary amount of certifications for the people, the necessary amount of organization certifications. So the CMM level 5 was very widely used as a certification criteria for an organization. So by the end of the 20th century, Indian companies had become the ISO 9000 certified. So this is for the process certification, and SEI CMM level 5. So CMM level 5, again, if you Google it, so it's a certification which is needed for the software companies. So it talks about the different processes, how they need to be maintained, managed. So the CMM level 5 was considered as the highest level of certification which all the Indian four giants had with them. And this led to something called as SEEPs. So SEEPs is basically a special economic zone. So SEEPs can be called as the birthplace of Indian outsourcing and the offshoring industry. It was created in 73 and it was an export processing zone. But then what happened is the government provided a lot of tax benefits for companies that were working out of SEEPs. Now the whole idea of SEEPs was it created a zone where companies could work, and there were a lot of tax advantages, a lot of benefits that the government gave, say for example tax holidays and stuff like that, which helped the companies that were working out of these special economic zones. And even if you look at them right now, there are a lot of companies in the manufacturing plants or a lot of companies who are into gems and jewelries who are based in SEEPs. So SEEPs, which is based in Andheri, is really famous, right? You'll see a lot of companies, a lot of diamond jewelry companies, diamond cutting companies, which are based in SEEPs. So SEEPs majorly houses the electric hardware manufacturing companies, software companies and jewelry exports of India. More than 150 units operate in SEEPs today. So as I said, SEEPs was a concept that was developed by the Indian government to provide good amount of boost to these particular industries, and this helped a lot in the IT industry also. So what happens is, say any particular goods or services that come or go out of SEEPs, there were a lot of reliefs in terms of the tax, and this, believe me, has a lot of impact on the company bottom line. So having seen the growth of the Indian IT outsourcing industry, let us now look at a few of the operational models that are involved when we talk about outsourcing contract. So there are essentially four operational models, and these models are evolving as we speak today. So the first and the most basic is staff augmentation. Next comes the project based outsourcing, which involves the entire project getting outsourced to the company who wants to build the project around. The third is build, operate and transfer. So this is when the company who is given or awarded the contract, they will build the entire infrastructure, operate it, and then transfer the know-how back to the company for them to pick it up from there. And the last is the managed service outsourcing. So if you look at all the four, so managed service outsourcing, just very briefly, it's about complete outsourcing. A total outsourcing contract is given to the vendor. So if you look at all these four different models or approaches, you see that the vendor or the outsourcing company is actually gaining value in the entire value chain. So managed service outsourcing is at the top because it has a complete manageability of the entire system, processes, SLAs, etc., etc. Build, own, and transfer is once you build, you actually transfer it back. So that comes at number two. Project-based outsourcing is when a particular functionality is given to the outsourcing company to develop. And the last is staff augmentation is when resources are given. So let us understand each of them in more detail. First, it talks about staff augmentation. So as I said, this is the basic of all the outsourcing models. You add the contractors to increase the output as demanded by the organization. You still control all the resources, but then setup allows you to add on resources, add on services which are presently deficient in your organization. So say, for example, if for doing a particular job you require 10 people, but then you only have 7. So what you would do is you would basically take 3 resources who are not on your payroll, but then you take it from outside. So these would be contract workers who can be on your payroll. A very simple example, right? So in many companies, what happens is because there are a lot of cost pressures and a lot of pressures on reducing the headcount, what they do is they generally take resources from, say, the IT companies. Now, I know the logic sounds very absurd, but then trust me, this is the way it is happening in companies right now. Many multinational companies, they do not want to show a high number of people on their payrolls. So what they do is they generally hire these people from these external agencies. So they are termed as contract workers, or they are basically not on the rolls. They would negotiate a fixed pricing contract with the company that is providing these resources. Now, from the organization perspective, who is receiving these resources? Now, there are many benefits when you engage in a contract like this. So, say for example, the first and the most important reason is you don't have to give the same amount of employee benefits to the external party as you give it to your internal employee. And believe me, this is a huge cost. So, say for example, if there are a lot of medical policies, a lot of leaves, a lot of other company allowances. So say for example something like a car, a stay, and something of that sort. If you have people on contract, so then you are not bound to give. The second most important reason is if you have some kind of cost pressures in your company, then the contract employees are the ones who can easily be asked to leave, right? Because they are on contract. Whereas for the internal employees, you might have to pay some kind of a severance package. You would have a long gestation period. Probably the employees who are going out or who've been asked to go, because if the company is not doing well, they might, you know, a kind of revolt and tarnish the brand image as such. So that is the reason why, you know, people tend to have resources from outside. So this, as I said, is the most basic form of outsourcing. In addition to being the most basic form, this has the least risk, right? Because what is the risk? You hire people from an external agency. Whenever a job is done, probably you give them a notice and then you get the people out. So those things need to be mentioned in the contract that you sign with the outsourcing vendor. But then it becomes a minimal risk. Now, what is a major risk here is that the kind of skill set that you expect, the vendor might not provide the right amount of skill set. So what companies generally do is that whenever you require resources on premise that are being sourced from a vendor, they engage in a joint interview of those resources, and only after you receive a go ahead, then the vendor is asked to get the resources on board. So you may use this to expand the current capacity to serve the short term or the immediate business benefits. The second operational model is that of project outsourcing. So IT outsourcing starts with the outsourcing of projects. So small projects, small functionalities, or part of the large projects can be outsourced to mature players in the market. So the projects were full lifecycle bespoke development that include outsourced to independent, that could be handled independently. So which could include aspects like, and believe me, all aspects of the software development lifecycle, or the SDLC as we call it, they could be outsourced. So right from design, coding, to testing, rigorous penetration testing, application testing, UAT testing, systems integration testing, the support and the UAT, and the production implementation with a post-implementation warranty. So everything could be covered under a project outsourcing contract. So just to summarize, two key important things. One is either the entire project could be outsourced, or a part of the project could be outsourced, and it would involve all life cycle of the SDLC, that is the software development life cycle, design, coding, everything. Now a very important point is not mentioned here, which says about the requirement analysis, right? Yeah, so I think it's mentioned on the next slide. The requirement definition is not included in the outsourcing contract. Now, why is this so? Is because requirement gathering, or getting a requirement from the business, it requires a sign off from the business. So it is not just a IT thing, but then there is a lot of functional knowledge, a lot of business insights that go in when you collect these requirements. And that is the reason why you see a lot of jobs which have descriptions saying that a functional consultant, right? A lot of jobs in case of SAP, in case of CRM, you'll see a lot of people who have this functional knowledge that can convert the business insights, the business logic, into something that could be understood by the application development guys or by the programmer. So what these people do is they convert this business logic and give an output to the developers that they could understand. So the requirement gathering phase involves direct discussion with the business community. The IT outsourcer is only responsible for the IT department. But then if you talk about the broader aspect of the project, it is the end-to-end delivery, right? Converting that business into an application which is meant to be used by different users. So the requirement phase is quite uncertain in terms of its scope, timeline, and hence it is not estimated and not really advised that it should be outsourced. Without a requirement definition, the rest of the project would be inaccurately estimated. So requirement analysis and getting the initial project plan in place is the heart of every project. Again, getting a sign off with the business is always an internal action between the business and the IT department, and that is where the end vendors are not really involved, because as I mentioned, getting a sign off from the business on the requirement is the job of that particular functional consultant who could be on the roles of the company, and then he would liaison with the IT vendor and get the IT outsourced work done. But then converting that business logic, getting a sign off from the business who are the custodian of that particular project, is the job of the internal IT department, and so the outsourcing vendors are not involved as such. The scope and the budget linked issues are therefore internal to the organization and are not given to the vendor as such. The third model that I'll talk about is the build, own and transfer. So this is the third model. It is now we are slowly, you know, climbing up the value chain. We've discussed the two models. Now let us discuss the third model. So this the build, operate and transfer, the use of a offshore outsourcing partner to build a team and manage operations at a offshore location. So what happens is a very common example of this is housing a customer service or a telemarketing operations in India. So this is basically done for cost saving perspective. Now what happens is, once you've set up this department, once you've operated it, so you would also have some resources on premise who could actually operate this. And once this project sees the light of the day, you've built it you've built a framework around it, developed the processes and all, and then you have a lot of people on premise to actually operate the entire functionality that you've developed. So once this operate phase is done, then you transfer this entire functionality back to the company that has outsourced you the contract. So this is the build, operate and transfer. So you build the functionality, which again is a part of the project management or the project outsourcing that we spoke about, which is model 2. But then on top of model 2, you have the operate phase. So which is having the right set of people to operate the functionality. And once these two phases are done, you then transfer it back to the company. So this is the third model. Now, let us discuss the fourth model here, which is the managed services outsourcing. Now, as I said, it lies at the top of the value chain simply because it talks about a total outsourcing. You build, operate, own, and manage it yourself. So it is sometimes better to have a long-term engagement of services with your vendors. For growth, profit, or expansion, you need concrete indicators of improvement in the business. For this, you may use the managed services or the total outsourcing, as it is called, where the vendors act as consultants. In this case, projects are treated as a part of the system where a complementary of the client business is managed. Managed services is widely acknowledged as the best model to adopt for technology outsourcing, which have a long-term outlook. Widely tipped as the holy grail of technology outsourcing, managed service model is an attractive proposition both for the vendors and the outsourcing organization. Now, I think I'll complete the next slide as well, and I'll give you an example which you can relate to. Managed services is also known as a fully outsourced model. I told you about the total outsourcing, where the vendor takes complete control, the end-to-end responsibility of a set of deliverables in a project. This model is generally adopted when the work can be clearly scoped and you can have a clear demarcation with the deliverables even in the maintenance scenarios. So let us consider an example of a total outsourcing contract. Now, a very typical example with the Indian government is the outsourcing contract which is awarded to TCS for maintaining, managing, building the entire passport application. Right now, and I'll take you through how a passport application has seen rapid changes earlier when it was handled by the in-house government employees and now with TCS. So earlier what used to happen is the passport applications were accepted in the post offices. There were designated passport offices where the passport applications were handled. So there were physical forms that needed to be filled and these had to be processed. So there was a lot of time and effort that was spent. And believe me, when a customer used to apply for a passport, he had to wait for a lot of time before getting an interview for the passport at the passport office. So it involved, as I said, a lot of physical copies, a lot of photographs. Now, what the government of India has done is they've given a complete outsourcing contract to TCS for building this passport application, operating it, managing it, and they're currently doing it for them. So what happens is now if you walk into a passport center, all the employees that you would see are the employees of TCS. So right from the person who gives you a token to the last employee. There are only two or three major government officials involved who actually, you know, do the final verification. But then the rest of the people are employees of TCS. Now what this has brought is it has reduced the time that it took to deliver a passport to the customer. Now probably you will get it within 20 days or 30 days. So earlier it took a lot of time. Plus, so the time has reduced, the efficiency has increased. What TCS has brought is a lot of document management systems. We discussed the document management system as a part of ERP. So what they've done is they've eliminated all the physical documents in place. So what you now do is you have to submit an online form. You don't even need six different passport photographs. So the passport photographs got its name from the physical passport application that it used to have. So now you just need to walk into that center at your designated appointment time. They would do a scanning of the documents. They would do a e-verification of your documents. They would click the photograph in and through their cameras, which is integrated with their document management system. So all they do is they just scan the documents in their system, and all the documents are now in place. So it's basically a paperless trail that we are talking about. So you can see how the process has changed from being a completely paper-driven, people-driven process to becoming more agile, more paperless, more methodical, and faster time to deliver the end result. So this is a complete outsourcing of the passport contract that I was talking about. So let us understand this in more detail. Now you know the example and probably you can relate it more. So complete decision making responsibility for providing the agreed services deliverables is with the vendor. Some of the key features of a managed service model are: you have clearly defined SLAs for each deliverables, and obviously along with the SLAs there are penalties defined. So SLA is a very broad term which talks about a service level agreement, but then a service level guarantee is incomplete without a penalty. So what if someone breaches the SLA? Then it is bound by some kind of legal penalties in place. So very clearly defined SLAs for each deliverables and the penalties applicable for non-delivery, which is a part of the contract. Generally, budgets are calculated on the basis of FTEs. So this is generally calculated in terms of the total man hours, and it could be over a period of say one to five years. So in case of a complete outsourcing contract, say for example, if the complete IT operations, including the desktop maintenance, including the network maintenance, is outsourced to IBM for that matter, then the way a contract is calculated is basis the number of man hours that people might spend. There could be different contract terms as to have X number of resources on premise to service, the SLA, the time taken to actually service, the responsiveness. So everything could be a part of those SLAs. So for this model to work, the client should show confidence in the vendor to hand over the entire application to the vendor, and the vendor should also have an excellent understanding of the client system, right? So it is not just one way. A lot of client references, a lot of cross checks have to be made for the organization to outsource that work. Even that vendor should have a lot of credentials with them saying that they have done similar projects of these kind, so as to gain the benefit. The role of the client will be that of a viewer, contacts management, contract management, and budget tracking. Vendor will be responsible for staff managing stakeholder expectations. So as I said, the end-to-end delivery, customer expectation, everything is now managed by the vendor because it's completely outsourced. The delivery of service may be performed by any location. So either it could be onshore at the client location, or it could be offshore, or it could be a near shore, or it could be a combination of each of these. So like in case of the passport application, so as per the government regulations, what they wanted is that they had certain designated or passport centers in which they wanted the entire setup to be done. So what they've done is they've asked TCS guys to have their resources there, develop the systems there itself. So that's the delivery model for the complete outsourced contract. So let us also now understand what are the benefits of a completely managed service. So some of the advantages include the delivery. Since the delivery and the stakeholder management are with the vendor, the organization can focus on their core set of business. So just imagine a situation where an enterprise is into a manufacturing domain, say for example a company like Volkswagen, right, who is into manufacturing of cars. Now being into the car manufacturing industry, the automotive industry, it would rather spend most of its time into developing new products, developing new futuristic cars, developing hybrid cars, getting IoT enabled cars, you know, getting electric cars in place. So spending a lot of time in the R&D, making, designing. So these are the core activities that an automotive vendor would do. So some of the non-core activities, so say for example, like managing and maintaining the computer network, managing the laptops, PCs, tablets, and so on. So such kind of non-critical activities can be outsourced. So this gives a lot of advantage. Second is the SLA-based contract can put at rest the customer worries of handling the stakeholder expectation. Now, who are the stakeholders in case of Volkswagen? They are the internal employees, right? So if you have a SLA-based agreement with the completely outsourced vendor, so say if it's a TOS account, a TOS is a total outsourcing contract. So say for example, if Volkswagen has a TOS account with IBM or Wipro, that means it's a SLA-based service which is guaranteed to deliver the results. So Volkswagen that way is assured that he'll get the necessary service in place. The SLA-based approach also results in adoption of good processes and knowledge management by the vendor, thus delivering measurable and sustainable long-term benefits. Vendors can take decisions without having to get the nod of the customer each and every time. So, say some of the mundane things, the vendor is supposed to handle it themselves. They will not go to the client each and every time there is a small issue or a process issue. So the vendor is expected to own the entire process end to end, and only if there is a major intervention, so say if there is a government regulation or there is something, you know, which is threatening to the business as such, so only during that time the vendor will approach the customer. Long-term SLA based contracts help vendors make strategic investments that directly benefit the customer also. So if you have a long-term SLA driven contract, say in case of the Indian passport, the contract with TCS could be, say for example, 5 years. Now don't quote me on that, but then say if it is for 5 years, then it better helps TCS to plan their strategy accordingly, plan their resources accordingly, right? So get those recurring benefits or get those recurring revenues from that particular project, and that will help them to build them the long-term strategy, and some of the cost advantages could then be passed on to the customer. Most vendors bring in the industry best practices, which again is a benefit to the customer. So I just mentioned that because TCS is a pioneer in handling big contracts like this. Say for example, something that was done for the PAN card, right? When PAN card was developed as a concept by the government of India, the PAN contract again was awarded to TCS because they were best in their own field. They had the technical knowledge, and that is the reason why the contract was awarded to them. So they bring in the necessary best practices in the industry, and this gives a benefit to the end customer.